With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Sam Pets Radio, Australia's coolest podcast network.
Hi everybody, welcome to Serious Issues, a comic book podcast hosted by me, Andrew Levins, and joined by special guest from the Wine Mimes podcast, we have Connor Stevens.
Hello, it's me, Connor Stevens, back again to tell you why manga is pretty good, even if sometimes you won't listen to us.
I mean, why it's always good if you only read the good stuff and avoid the bad stuff. We have lots of exciting series to talk about today, entire series that we've read, new volumes that we've picked up. Let me just run through. Let's go from the top. Let's give you a taste of what's to come. So today, me and Connor are going to be reviewing How Do We Relationship Volume 2. We're going to be talking about Mermaid Sagas, both the volume. So it's called Mermaid Saga, but we've read two of them. So hence Mermaid Sagas. I pluralized the books. There's two volumes of that.
But wouldn't the two volumes be the Mermaid Saga?
This is why you're here. we've got Berserk to talk about. We have JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. We have Akagi. Arjun?
I think it's Arjun.
Arjun, Demi-Human, Witch Watch, and of course, can't wait for this, Nine Dragons Ball Parade.
So we know, we've heard, we've listened, the fans want it, Nine Dragons Ball Parade is here.
We knew, we missed out on the Ball Parades, Dragons Ball Parades 1 through 8. But here we go, nine Dragons Ball Parade. You have to wait to the end of the episode to find out what the fuck that is. Connor and I have read a stack of manga in the last couple of weeks since we last spoke. And I'm ticking off a lot of, I guess, like things that everyone reckons you should read, and getting through some of those big boys on the, on the list, on everyone's list, I guess, on the internet. Actually, I stumbled across that. Maybe someone told me that like my goal should be to tick off everything on a website called My Anime List.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So if you go to
like something someone would say.
Yeah, if you go like best manga series, best manga of all time, or something like that. It's a fan voted website called My Anime List, and they have a top manga, and to give you a hint, One Piece, at one point, my favorite series and franchise of all time, is only number 3 on this list. So what could possibly be higher than One Piece on this list? You'll have to keep listening to find out. The first book we're going to be talking about on the podcast today is the second volume of a series that Connor and I talked about. Kind of took us by surprise. It has a horrible name called How Do We Relationship? and it is by a Japanese mangaka called Tamiful, and it is about young love between two girls that have just started going to college, and one of them is very shy and is totally terrified about what everyone will think of her, full stop, let alone what will they all think of her when she starts dating a girl. And the girl she starts seeing is the opposite. She's very boisterous and quite sure of herself for the most part. And the first volume kind of explored their relationship beginning, and as they kind of both realized they had feelings for each other, and, you know, they both were kind of sheepish at first. And then the kind of next step was how do they reveal it to their closest friends, and the fear that came with that. And this volume is now about that they've been dating for, I think, 3 months, and it kind of, you know, it explores those early months of when you start, of when you realize you're with someone that you're in love with, and how you can either cramp someone's style or live in the constant fear that you are cramping your beloved style. Connor, what did you think?
I adored it. Yeah, I mean, we spoke heaps on the previous volume about what we loved about it, but this one just cemented itself as something really beautiful. I think I read a lot of like Yuri and lesbian like manga, and I love it. And it's fluff that I just sink my teeth into and get out of it always. But this feels more than that. It feels like better to read this than just give it a label like Yuri. It feels like it's just a beautiful queer manga, because there's so much in it that's just so true to life, and there's a beautiful intimacy you don't see, not just in manga, but just not anywhere. Like, the book opens with these two characters figuring out how to, like, have sex with each other as young women, and that's not something you see anywhere, really, and it's not like a handbook or anything, but it's just those moments like that, and an exploration of being young and queer and seeing these characters go through so many real things that happen for queer couples, and, you know, the joy of it and the downfalls while still being just like the most adorable shit in the world. It's so beautiful. It just makes my heart sing. I'm so happy it's a thing that exists.
Yeah, you would think, looking at this book from the name, How Do We Relationship, that it wouldn't be a subtle at all in the themes that it explores. It bugs me so much that I love a book that's called How Do We Relationship, because that just sounds like a BuzzFeed top 50 list. You know what I mean? Like, it sounds like a clickbait title. And so I looked up this series and what it's called in Japan, and it's called Tsukiyatte Agete Mo Ikana, which translates to May I Go Out With You. And that is such a better name.
Oh, so much better. Oh, Viz, you let us down. What is this nonsense?
Because it's not just like, you know, there's levels to that. It is, you know, can each of our characters, do they have the courage to you know, it could just be them asking the other person, may I go out with you? But then also it's about like the social ramifications of like, what happens if I go out with you, and what will people around us think? And, you know, am I able to let myself do this to myself and to you? I think it's a way better name. So we should petition. We should get in touch with whoever started Release the Snyder Cut. And we want to release May I Go Out With You. Make it a hashtag. Make it happen. Make sure you put that hashtag onto every single post that Viz puts on Twitter in the next month. I think that's how the Snyder Cut worked. Don't actually do that.
Unfortunately, I mean, this is the one thing I would watch 4 hours of rather than the 4 hours of suffering in the Snyder Cut, but that's neither here nor there, right?
Did you actually watch it all?
I did, unfortunately.
God, it was awful.
Ugh, just
the worst.
Zero lesbians, just very poor form, if I'm honest.
100% less lesbians than How Do We Relationship. yeah, that was awful, but How Do We Relationship, ignore the name, or maybe even like get one of those label printers, and then print out, may I go out with you? Maybe I'll do that. So you get one of those like cool retro bumpy labels. I don't think you can buy those kind of ones anymore. But
just get one from Officeworks.
Yeah, perfect. Just print that over the top and call it what it deserves to be called. But yeah, I really, really recommend this. I think in general, you know, it's important to read stories from different perspectives so you are able to empathize with elements of that you encounter in the real world. And I think this is a great example of a book that belongs on your shelf for that reason, and for the reason that it is also a great story with great characters and excellent art.
And fantastic fashion, even better than last volume. Yeah.
Very true. So that is How Do We Relationship Volume 2. A standing ovation. We're both standing up, clapping our hands.
Just.
Now we move on to another series. So that was published by Viz at the end of last year, early this year. And around the same time, they published two volumes of a manga by the legendary Rumiko Takahashi, who is best known for, I mean, several very different series. You've got Inuyasha is her best known one, right, Connor?
Yeah, it's the big Shonen Jump one that, you know, ran for like hundreds of episodes on TV and was huge. In the West, at least. I think like her biggest in Japan would be, you know, maybe what you had, Mason Ikkoku, or...
Yeah, Mason Ikkoku. I reviewed the first volume of that Urusei a couple of episodes ago.
Yatsura.
Yeah, that's her first one, right? Urusei Yatsura. And then
Okay.
Ranma 1, 2. Was it Ranma Half? I don't know what that's called. I
think Ranma Half. Okay. That one was actually big in the West too for people older than me. I'm too baby.
But yeah, no, the Maison Ikkoku was like a kind of like comedy, like, you know, awkward situational comedy manga. And I thought that's kind of what she excelled at. And I was expecting that from Mermaid Saga too, like a, you know, a mermaid based situational comedy, series, which sounds fantastic. But what Mermaid Saga actually is completely different from that. And dare I say, far better. It's a horror book.
Yeah, it's like a depressing, almost anthological horror book.
Yeah, and it reminds me a lot of, I mean, the nearest comparison I would say is the Tomie series by Junji Ito.
That's how someone sold it to me, actually. They're like, great. Oh, have you read Tomie? And then you should read this. And I was like, oh, okay.
So there are two volumes of this, and it's done. So if you are terrified of the space that your average manga series will take up on your bookshelves, this is just two books. They're pretty well priced. I think 25 US is the going rate for each volume. And each volume is about 400 pages long. And it starts out, the first story, basically we meet a boy who is trying to, a young man who is trying to track down a mermaid. And the rumor is that if you eat the flesh of a mermaid, you live forever. And while that's happening, we meet a girl who is bedridden and being looked after by older women, and you kind of get the feeling that she's not allowed to leave her room. And we learn that the young man isn't looking for a mermaid to eat the flesh and live forever. He's already inadvertently done that in his past hundreds of years ago, and he's been desperately searching for a mermaid so he can reverse the curse and die of old age like everyone else. And so it's basically like it's a kind of a story of friendship between him and this other girl, that the girl that we meet, like, who's kind of like not allowed to leave her room. It's being tended to by old ladies who has also eaten the flesh of a mermaid. And there's a sinister reason as to why, but not on her behalf. And it's kind of about these two like immortal mermaid eaters going on like weird adventures in this crazy, scary world of mermaids. Did I do it justice, Connor?
Yeah, I think that was maybe your finest recap yet. Yeah, I actually only read this a couple of days ago, and I think the first thing is like Mason Ikkoku, the physical release of the Viz volumes, gorgeous.
Oh, incredible!
There's like a foil scale cover and the gorgeous interior color pages. It looks fantastic on the shelf and in your hands.
This is like one of the few, because often I see like color pages and you're like, oh, that's fun, but also I don't care. Black and white's fine. But this is like, oh man, if there was the budget to one day color these as beautifully as these few color pages, it's like almost like pastels. It's brilliantly colored. These are phenomenal editions of manga. And definitely if you've made it this far and for some reason you've never dipped your toe in the world of manga, I would actually suggest this is like an amazing beginner book for someone to just go in. Two volumes. It's amazing. It feels familiar but very new and inventive at the same time. I have no idea when this was written. Like, you could tell me it was written yesterday or 30 years ago, I don't believe you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it touches upon so many great themes to, like, it's the ability to be about immortality, which is then about mortality and humanity, but then being about immortals, this book jumps around a whole bunch. So, you know, they go on sort of adventures together, and then there, you know, he's a backstory because he's 500 years old, and it all builds up to a big finale. And the two main characters, fantastic. Miss Mano, who is like just kind of a little brat in the first chapter, becomes, I think, maybe one of Takahashi's most endearing female characters, you know, sort of from Inuyasha and Ranma Half. I love her. And I thought it was really fantastic.
I really enjoy Yuta, the young dude as well. Well, no, he's already young, is he? Like 500 years old.
500.
500. Yeah, I love this book. I'm only halfway. I'm sorry. I finished the first volume and I've just started the second.
Oh, lovely.
Did you smash it both volumes in one day?
Yeah. Once I had them both in my hands, it's so easy to read. Like,
yeah, it really is.
The art is beautiful, but it's so fluid and the panel work is just so directive.
Yeah. Like, great book. I'm now maybe hooked on Rumiko Takahashi. I always knew she was considered one of the greats, but having loved Maison Ikkoku, I've read a few chapters of Urusei Yatsura, but I know that that's like her first long form manga, so when she was quite young, but I still enjoyed it. It was just very goofy. But now Mermaid Saga, like, I'm like, oh my god, what if there's more shit like this that she's done? I mean, this is surprising no one right now, but I may go on a quest to read every single thing Rumiko Takahashi has ever done, because I loved this so much. So that's Mermaid Saga Volume 1 and Volume 2, both available through Viz. This is next book that I want to talk about, six books in particular. They were a gift to me from Connor. Connor was ridding his shelves of some manga series that he had no plans to complete, and Berserk was one of them. The reason
sometimes you just can't have 70, 38 volume series shelves.
It's 40 volumes of Berserk exist so far, and it's an unfinished series. But on this myanimelist.net/topmanga.php website that I frequent way too regularly, have I read many anything else from the top 20 accidentally? No. Oh well. So the number one book, number one manga of all time is Berserk, and Berserk is, I just know it, always knew it as, like, you know, this isn't for little boys. Berserk is for big nasty men. it's by Kentaro Miura, and I mean, I guess it's kind of like almost like a legendary grim 90s series for some people, right? Like, I feel like this is like one of the exports that like, I guess, like, you know, people that watched all those super brutal OVAs that made their way over here in the 90s would have attached themselves to. I think, like, the fact that, you know, it is a gory dark fantasy comic was like kind of its main selling point. It proudly emblazoning the parental advisory sticker on every volume that it published.
Everyone's like, yo, you got to check this out. Siggy just beheads a cunt. Come on, bro. You know.
Yeah. So it's about this dude Guts, who has a big sword. And the first volume and a half, it's kind of just like him on an adventure to make his way through the castle, fight a demon. He befriends a pixie named Puck. And when he gets to the castle and fights this demon, some crazy shit happens. And then we go back in time and we see kind of Guts's origin story, from what happened when he was a child to his found family in like a group of mercenary soldiers. And the first, so you've given me the first six volumes of Berserk, and I was like, oh, this is fine at first. And then wouldn't you know it, by volume six, I was very hooked. The art is spectacular. Like, I'm not a fantasy guy by any means, but it's very hard not to, get sucked into the world that Miura, paints, or draws, in this. It's like, It's very, like, you know, soldiers in suits of armor with big swords fighting like the odd demon, but sometimes it's just them. It's just them fighting other soldiers. But there's such a wonderful pace to his art, and a lot of the world building is done through art really well as well. And you find yourself like, Guts is such a stupid character when you meet him in the first few volumes. He's just like swearing at monsters and swinging his sword around and chopping heads off and stuff. And he still does that when he's younger, but there's a vulnerability to him. And I want to keep reading. And so you've given me a gift, and that gift is now I have to spend $700 completing all of the volumes of manga of Berserk.
Here's an addiction. I'm glad you're enjoying it.
So I've ordered the next six volumes, 7 to 12. So I now have 12 of 40.
Oh, you gotta order 13 and 14 immediately. That's the end of that arc. Come on. You gotta tear through that one.
Okay. All right. So, 14 is the big twist that everyone talks about.
The big one, yeah.
I have no
idea. Do you
know
nothing about that?
No, nothing about it. That's crazy. Yeah. So, no one spoil it for me or I'll kill you. I'll get the biggest sword I can and I'll chop your head off.
He gets an even bigger sword.
What a twist. Well, it turns out his sword is a small sword. No. This whole time, I thought it was a big sword. but yeah, how much of it have you read?
All of it. I'm not like the crazy Sun Berserk, but I still keep up, I'd say monthly, but whenever he gets around to releasing a chapter once or twice a year, if we're lucky.
Yeah. It's one of those ones.
Yeah. Karnak is still absolutely crazy. Like, I think a lot of it is just, it's a lot of a series. Like there is like a lot of rape and murder and stuff like that, and sometimes I'm like, but there's always enough to keep me there, and it always looks gorgeous, and the characters are actually really endearing. Like, there are sometimes you're like, oh, I wish his female characters were better, but then, you still love Casca, and you still love all these characters that you haven't met, but, you know.
Yeah.
He's got a big sword.
That's very true. Thank you for stating that again. So, yeah, I was going to opt for the deluxe editions.
The bricks.
What are they called? The volumes that you gave me, Connor, are like a perfect little, you know, you can fit it in your handbag. Berserk.
I always keep my Berserk on me.
Yep.
Just gotta ask.
all 40 volumes of Berserk on me. but they're like, you know, they almost look like romance novels. Even like the painted artwork.
Yeah, like gorgeous pulpy covers.
Yeah, it's very, very pulpy element to them. Which is really appealing. So I think I'm going to complete the full 40 volumes of this format. Even though the Berserk Deluxe, they are pretty incredible. They're enormous. They're like triple size almost. Like very, I think it's like A4 size pages. A big black hardcover. You could absolutely, you may be able to fend yourself from a big sword by holding one of these, using one of these as a shield. But don't come back to me if it fails. I tried. I was like, oh, maybe I'll just do the dodgy and read the scanlation of this. And God, it was horrible. I lasted 40 pages at best, and I was like, what am I doing? I've been spoilt. It's a very, very good proper translation. And the series, you know, the number one on my animelist.com/topmanga.php. I gotta pay it the respect it deserves. So yeah, I'll be reading this one.
Also, officially. Don't sell yourself short. You've read three of the top 10.
Have I?
Monster, 20th Century Boys, and Pun Pun.
Yeah, it's true. I haven't read all of Pun Pun. Also, 20th Century Boys is outside of the top 10. It's number 11.
Oh, is it? Oh God, I can't read.
So
right, never mind.
Let's here.
My respect for you is lessened.
So yeah, let's go through number one, from 11 down to one. I want you to tell me how many you've read, and I'll tell you. So number 11 is 20th Century Boys by Naoki Urasawa, which I love. I know you've read that too.
Yep.
Then we have Kingdom, which is an ongoing manga series. Another
huge, but I haven't read it actually. This one is like just has not made a single drop in the West, but is with like it's always just behind One Piece in the best selling manga each year in Japan until Demon Slayer.
Set in China, right?
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be like a War of the Three, whatever.
The Warring States.
Romance of the Three Kingdoms. Oh, maybe the Warring States.
And then we have Slam Dunk.
Yep, you got to read that sometime. It is, you know, it is the sports manga.
I'm so annoyed that's not on the Shonen Jump app.
Yeah.
Because it's a big investment. Again, it's 31 volumes. At number 8, we have Grand Blue.
A bit. That one's like a really fun, like, college-age comedy. Just a bunch of college-age students getting drunk and pissing about.
Yep. Okay, interesting. Oyasumi Punpun or Goodnight Punpun is next. It's a great series. I've only read the first two volumes of it. I have three, so maybe I should complete that too. There's a lot of things I need to complete. But that's a very depressing coming of age story.
Yeah, just real. Have we talked about it on the show before? Maybe not you and me.
We've talked about his other works, I think.
Mm.
But yeah, I know. I think Pum Pum was one of the first things you ever recommended to me. because
thanks, my NLA list. You were always there for me.
Number six, we have Monster, another Naoki Urasawa joint. I prefer 20th Century Boys, but Monster is also one of the greats.
For sure.
Number five, Full Metal Alchemist. I know a beloved manga series and anime series, especially for people who don't watch or claim they never watch anime. I know Full Metal Alchemist is like one of their favorites. It's like, yeah.
Is that on the Shonen Jump out?
No, it's not.
Oh, but
you can buy a full collection for $200. So I might do that.
Hot.
Vagabond is at number four. Have you read Vagabond?
Have you read this one?
Oh. No, I've not read Vagabond.
I've read shitty scanlations, but only now have I bought those. Like, you've maybe seen them, the gorgeous Fizzbig editions.
They're so good.
They're so good. And to actually read them, like, almost as God intended without a shitty translation, it is a whole new experience.
Great.
So I'm doing that. I'm going to, like, seven of the big vault boys in.
That's the same mangaka as Slam Dunk, right?
Yes.
Great. Number three is One Piece. The great One Piece.
Got to get around to that someday.
Everyone listening, that's who we're talking to. At one point, we won't let you listen to Serious Issues until you can prove you've read all 1,000 and is it seven now? Chapters of One Piece.
So.
Of course, we know that number one is Berserk, but number two is JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, Steel Ball Run.
Part seven.
That's part seven. And so I read the first two parts of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure on the Shonen Jump app a while ago. It is a series that started in the 80s, written and drawn by Hirohiko Araki. And the first one is set in like England, I guess. And it's like it basically like every series, every volume of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure follows someone from the lineage of the Joe, what's their last name again?
Joestar.
How could I forget? The Joestar family. And it's them fighting this demon called Dio. And it starts out like, you know, pretty run-of-the-mill, like, fight manga. And then it just gets, like, you know, bizarre is an apt description of how weird and crazy this book gets. I read the first two volumes and then was like, okay, that's enough fight manga. I'm going to read about Mahjong or something fucking stupid like that instead. And I knew that I had to come back to JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. So I did last month. I started reading JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Part 3, Stardust Crusaders. And this is the one that kind of shot the series to the beginnings of its immense popularity in Japan and now because of the anime in the West. It introduces the concept of, like, so basically in the first two volumes, like, you know, yeah, it's a big, you know, muscly boys fighting comic, but they have this power called Hamon, which is just like a made-up power level thing where you can, you know, turn on your
Hamon. Harvest the sun.
Exactly. It makes you stronger. And that's kind of like the core, you know, force of the big boys fighting on the pages. Like, that's where they get their power from. Stardust Crusaders introduced the concept of a stand. And that is this, like, thing that you are cursed with, but you can also control it. And in some cases, it's, like, just, like, another dude who is, like, linked to you that you can control to fight for you. But some of the stands are way more obtuse than that as you meet different characters. What I didn't know about JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Stardust Crusaders is that it is a road trip story about, like, five muscly, often shirtless...
very straight men on an adventure together.
Very, very straight. Of all ages. And they basically travel from Japan to Egypt, to Cairo, using every form of transport possible because whenever they get on a plane or a train or a boat or a submarine, someone with a stand tracks them down and brings down whatever mode of transport they're trying to use to get to Dio in Cairo. God damn it. It was so much fun, Connor. I couldn't believe how fun it was.
It was like a fun roller coaster. You're like, oh, I read five chapters. It's okay. You know, I bet I'll get into it. And then, you know.
I couldn't put
the
it down.
Crest it.
It was absolutely ridiculous from like chapter 10 onwards. It just didn't stop. You just keep meeting all these stupid characters and they fight in the most ridiculous ways. And then half the time the bad guys get asked to join the team and people die and then they come back and then they all die. And then it's so funny. It's so like over the top and ridiculous. I loved it. I can see why this is the one that kind of made people love the series so much.
Mm.
It's one of the longest running, if not the current, it's the largest. It's Shueisha's largest ongoing manga series by volume count. There is 129 volumes as of December last year. So I went straight from that to part four, because these are almost like every part like jumps forward a generation and tells a new story with a new Joestar. So part four, I knew about this one that it was inspired by Twin Peaks. So it's set in like a small town, but there's someone with a stand ability in there who just keeps killing people. And so the JoJo from part three goes to this small town and we meet Josuke, the main JoJo of part four. And we meet his stand and he's still going to high school. And that's what I love. Like the main characters are just like high school boys who love going to high school and love wearing their uniform. Like at their core, that's all they are. If they didn't have these magical powers, all they would do
is just gonna be going to school.
They just love going to school and wearing their uniform and keeping their uniform clean. And like rejecting the advances of women. That's all they do when they're not fighting. I love it. So yeah, I'm halfway through this now.
Oh, fantastic.
It's so much fun. It's great. I know that this is this one of your favorite parts?
This is my favorite part, I think.
Great. Yeah. So far I can see why. You meet like brothers who are driven to do bad things in order to save their father. And you meet like stand abilities, like he can summon this weird lizard robot thing that can use sound. I don't know. There's so many insane superpowers in this. It puts One Piece's use of smile fruits and animal based superpowers. It just puts it to shame. This is the most inventive, crazy fight shonen manga I've ever read. But at some point, the series stops being shonen, right? Because it's now in a seinen series.
I mean, I don't think it really ever. Changes, perhaps they just changed it because like the demographic grew up for it.
Right, sure.
But I feel like it doesn't get like much more intense, punching people into stone and holes through the chest. It's kind of consistent in that regard.
Do we keep seeing big turds all the way through it? Because there's so many poos in this comic. It's crazy. Poos and infantile penises.
Well, I definitely remember a lot more infants, but I think the big turds are still around. Don't worry.
Phenomenal. I had to... I told this story on Hey Fam last week, but I was reading it and I knew that like the anime is how most people experience this series. And so at one point, one of the main characters gets turned into a six-year-old, and because he's so small, his clothes don't fit him. So he's buck-ass naked. And the person who's trying to kill him like throws him into like... tries to drown him in a bath. And all seems lost, but then he realizes he has one thing he can fight with, and he does a shit in the bath, and then he kicks the shit into the face of the guy who's trying to drown him. And I was like, there's no way that like a team of animators like really faithfully adapted this moment. And I went and I watched the episode, and they absolutely did. There's little boy dick and big old turds all the way through this episode. I couldn't believe it. 5 stars. I mean, I know they don't give Oscars away to television, but it's a travesty that episode of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure didn't win the Academy Award for Best
Lifetime
Picture.
Lifetime Achievement Award.
And they made a special cast of the Academy Award statue, the Oscar himself, the titular Oscar, with a poo stuck to his face. but yeah, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure... does it keep getting better, or is 4 like your favorite by a long shot?
No, not like particularly. I think, all right, if we rank them.
Yeah, hell yeah, let's
do it.
Part
4, part 8, mm-hmm. part 7,
mm-hmm.
part 5, part 6, part 2, part 3, part 1.
Wow, part 3 is your second least favorite.
Yeah, it's still so good. I love Joseph in part 2 so much. He is... just the dumbest. But I think, so you'll kind of learn that like part seven is sort of a soft reboot for the series. And that was the one that I sent the art of the other day to you that
yep.
it just looks like insane. And it still looks like that insane in part eight. But so part eight is sort of has a lot of the same vibes as part four. Because what I really love about part four is it's just, it really slows down to let you just hang out with these characters. Like part three, you know, five, six, they're like these big road trips. You know, part five's through Italy, part six through a fucking prison. But in part four, there's just like chapters where they just beat up someone to get their lottery ticket back, or they're just like fighting a manga creator because they live on their street and they accidentally stumbled across him. And I think that is just like the most endearing shit. And part eight is sort of that, but with like a really huge, like an even bigger murder mystery in it. And it's, that's the one that's still ongoing. I think it's got about a year left. We're really in the end game, and it is every month is such a joy. The current arc is like a guy whose stand was giving a TED talk and they had to fight through the TED talk. it doesn't stop. It's truly incredible.
That's great. I love it. I'm looking forward to, yeah, like burning through this series this year. I know I have to switch to like, cause yeah, they haven't even completed all of part four on the Shonen Jump app yet. And Viz haven't released all of the volumes of it yet. So I actually do, if I want to keep reading it, I have to switch to the Scanlation, but I think it's a pretty good one, right?
Yeah, they're good. They even overhauled all the old ones. So it's like the current translation team's up to date. But then at some point they went back and redid all the old ones to be clean and less well translated.
Yeah, less words you shouldn't say. that was like the main reason I couldn't read the Berserk one. Like it was just like, Guts would not call someone that repeatedly.
He's not on 4chan. It's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So that's JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, Stardust Crusaders, and Diamond is Unbreakable. Looking forward to reading it all. I'm finally doing it. But something that Connor finally did is something that I did around this time last year. It was how I survived the opening throes of COVID. Or maybe had I did it, maybe me reading this actually brought on COVID. Of course, I'm talking about Nobuyuki Fukumoto series Akagi. One of the two big Mahjong series that I read by him last year. And this one has the first, maybe third of it turned into an anime. The reason this is notorious as a story is that it started in the either late 80s or early 90s. And basically, like the first few chapters, like you meet this kid Akagi, who never has done any mahjong before, but he's on the run. He's a young criminal, and he escapes being caught by policemen by hiding in a mahjong game. And someone who's having bad luck until Akagi rocks up, he views him as a good luck charm. And so he starts using him in games to play for him. And Akagi just has this natural talent for mahjong. And so the first, I don't know, like 20, 30 something chapters, like, are quite brisk. And we see him play multiple games and meet all kinds of wacky characters. Do you have the timeline somewhere there for us, Connor?
I did save it. Hold on. Let me pull it up.
I know I've shared it for you before, but there is like this insane timeline where, the second half of the anime series, it introduces, Akagi to his greatest rival. And that rival is, this decrepit old man who, what's his name? It's,
Washizu.
He has become so bored of life that he now has young men, bet their lives against him in a game of mahjong where he bets money. So he's losing money if they win. But if they lose to him, every time he scores against them in mahjong, he takes some of their blood. And so, like, dozens of young men have lost their lives to Washizu and his murderous mahjong. And he thinks he's going to claim Akagi. And we see, like, it's like 13 episodes of the anime series. And the anime series, it just ends. It's like, and who knows what'll happen next. Like, it's such a bizarre ending to the anime. But I know a lot of series like that don't, you know, find the popularity that they were hoping for at the end of a series, just kind of end on this, like, weird kind of hopeful open note. So I decided, okay, I'm going to read this entire manga series. And the manga series basically reaches where the anime did at about chapter, like, before chapter 100, right, Connor?
Yeah, chapter 65, this arc starts.
That's when it starts. And so that the arc is one game of mahjong, of Washizu versus Akagi.
A single night.
And it goes from chapter 65 to, is it 304?
It's like 296, and then the last 10 chapters are like the aftermath.
So yeah, we're talking about 230 chapters long of one game of mahjong. And sometimes a chapter will be one of them looking at all of their tiles in front of them and just choosing the tile, and then it will end on a cliffhanger as they reach to the tile, and then no, they decide, oh my god, I can't touch that tile because what if he's going to do this? And even if you have no idea how mahjong is played, which I definitely don't, I kind of have a better idea because I've read the series, I think there's so much to love about this insane game. But it's mainly about, like, going into people's minds as they make these competitive decisions. Anyway, why didn't you read it until now, Connor? Is there a reason?
Because I was the reason you did this. I made a joke about the anime, and then you did the dumb fuck 11 things and read 307 chapters after, like, a joke I didn't think would land.
Yeah, I was playing mahjong, and I said, I have no, my wife and my sister-in-law and her fiance, the four of us were playing. And we weren't really sure if we were playing right. And then I posted about it, and you commented, "Just watch Akagi." And I was like, "I'll do more than that." So yeah, Nobuyuki Fukumoto has written. He's best known for Kaiji, which I've reviewed on the podcast before. That's the only, like, properly translated series in the West you can get. The first two volumes were put out by
Denpa
Press. And they're really, really great editions. You should track them down if you want to dip your toe into the world of Nobuyuki Fukumoto. But yeah, I went real ham and I read the 10. Not called the 10. It's just called 10, the guy on the way to glory or something like that. And Akagi is actually introduced in that series. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that's what I'm reading next.
Yeah, yeah. And so then he got a spin-off series. And that's what kind of, like, one of the things that Nobuyuki Fukumoto is so famous for. So I read all of it, and I couldn't. I was just, like, cackling to myself as I was reading this bonkers mahjong anime. Knowing that it could very well be one of those things that no one in my entire life ever reads, that I'll never be able to relate to anyone. But thankfully, Connor, you jumped on board. And what did you think?
Oh, it is. It is perfect. It is. So that one arc went for 20 years. It is older. That went for longer than I have currently been alive on this earth.
So but good. It is, that's how long it is fantastic. Being written for, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But over a single night, 1992, I think it's like August 13, 1992, to 230 chapters take place. I loved it. I think it's a lot of what, funnily enough, you love in sports manga and what I really loved in like the Yu-Gi-Oh! Anime. I think there's, and the manga, there's really something to that as well. But I love the game of Mahjong as well. And the depth of that game and the psychological warfare with the added ability in this series that you can see your opponent's tiles basically bar like one. It's just so much. It doesn't get boring when... Okay, let me pull up a page. It's like, oh man, it's like just so much of like, yeah, so you have like the one Sopin, but it could be a 147 weight, or it could be like a 268 weight, and however will he play it off? I know I will win this. And it's like, wait, what if he was playing me out this entire time? And he was waiting for me to discard so he could call upon the other tile over there. And then it ends the chapter. And then just when you think you know the play, Akagi does something completely different because he doesn't care enough about his life and he's willing to do whatever he wants to try to win.
Yeah, that's like the big thing about Akagi as a character is that like he places no value on his life. He doesn't care if he lives or dies. And that's what makes him like such a threat to everyone and also such a weird, compelling character. The anime is excellent. I highly recommend it. It's on Crunchyroll if you have Crunchyroll. It's, you know, not, it's pretty much, it's in standard definition if that bugs you, but it's worth it. Has a great opening and closing theme song. It's animated really well, and it's like, what, 26 episode, one season. There's a moment, I think, in like the third or fourth. If you don't like it by the third or fourth episode, it's definitely not for you. Don't worry about it. You can avoid this Mahjong manga madness for your entire life, but definitely give it a shot. Watch three episodes of Akagi, and maybe you can come on this journey with us.
It just like keeps ramping up. Like there's just hell involved, and like yes. death and coming back, and they Akagi learns to live for, you know, live for this death, and his opponent like begins to grow this insurmountable respect for this man he now has to kill, despite being like an unrepentant killer. And there's so many great moments. Like, I think the best moment, as I can say, is, like, the three-pay wait where he fakes them out twice and pulls the last one. It's like, that doesn't mean anything to you, but it was the best, like, five fucking chapters of manga I ever read.
It was more than five chapters. Are you kidding me?
That was just that one moment.
Of course, yeah.
So, you know, there's incredible moments, like, to read, it's not the 5 and 8 so wait either. So that means, assuming Washizu is in Tenpai, is that the 6 so is his pair, and that extra 6 pin is part of a 5 and 8 pin, or 4 and 7 pin weight. It's been narrowed down to these two hands. The opponent's weight is exposed. And then Washizu laughs, and you know, that's not it anymore. Read the next chapter to find out what he's really got in store for Akagi.
So
it's
good.
Perfect.
Yeah.
It's
I love that you get like commentary from Akagi, from Washizu, and then from everyone watching as well, as they like fear for either Akagi or Washizu's life. And yeah, like, it's brilliant.
The second half where Washizu's like boy band just starts cheering him on from the sidelines, and then Ogi just gets his other mobsters in. So there's like 8 more people just screaming from the sidelines as people draw tiles. Very good.
Unbelievable. So that is Akagi. Please, if you're listening and you're like, fuck it, I'm an idiot, read along with us.
You can truly find out about the darkness of Mahjong at the Demon Kings that lives in that darkness.
That should be like the how to get on serious issues. Read all
how
of Akagi.
How to get on a watch list.
Oh, yeah, and also a watch list, yeah. So, you know, it's worth it. Now we're going to move on to another series that has finished, but finished quite recently, Ajin Demi-Human. Tell me about this series, Connor.
One of the first manga I ever sort of read monthly as it was being released on the Crunchyroll manga app. This is by Gamon Sakura. It's a seinen manga about a world in which there is a sort of like race or bloodline of immortal people that exist in this world called Ajin. You know, they cannot die, and they also are able to summon, like, these black ghosts that are actually almost like stands, funnily enough. but are more violent and murderous. And no one knows they're an Arjun until they die for the first time. So it starts with like 16-year-old Nagai K. He's kind of like, you know, just going through his life, and he gets hit by a car, but oh wait, he comes back to life. And this is a world where the government wants these people to do like horrible experiments on them to, you know, try to figure out the secret of immortality. So he's got to go on the run, or he's going to be experimented by the government. But that also creates like a race, like a group of like empowered Arjun who wants to take down the government for doing it. So he eventually ends up getting involved in this like big war between, you know, this one small sort of like terrorist cell of Arjun and the rest of the world. It is, and end up sort of really like the big selling point of it is it ends up being a cat and mouse game between sort of our main character, who you actually learn is kind of like a cynical cunt. Like he is like, he's the kind of guy who when like, he has like one view on the world, and if it doesn't conform to that, then it just gets cut. Like a good example is like one day he learned his friend's father was, you know, a criminal. So he just assumed his best friend's now a criminal. And he just cuts contact and, you know, he's just out for himself. But the main antagonist is this one sort of like one Arjun who's been like an immortal since the Vietnam War. And he just loves murder, and he just absolutely loves the thrill of the hunt. And once he gets into a fight with Kay and they sort of like butt heads, you know, it becomes an all-out war between the two of them, where Sato is the name of the antagonist, just seems such a worthy opponent in this fight that the world becomes embroiled in it. And there's a lot to it. I think there's a lot to these characters as well. Like, a lot of the side cast are really fantastic. Like, childhood friends, like this dumbass teenager, the kind of bureaucracy, these different Arjun, who get to be the heart of the series, because outside of, like, the protagonist and antagonist, you really sort of get the tragedy of the series. And I really love this, like, American scientist who gets, like, stuck in Japan during this war and can't stand the taste of Japanese cigarettes, and that's, like, half his character. But how it sort of plays out is the characters are kind of written in a way that you would love about Straight Bullets or a Brubaker series, like that really sort of, these can be horrible people, but they also just real people stuck in these situations, and kind of like the, you know, that societal grief and this sort of combat of Parasite or Tokyo Ghoul, like it's kind of got that flavor. And I absolutely loved it. It ended super well. The final arc probably, like, wasn't the strongest, like, plotting-wise, but all the characters have a really good finale that opens up the series, like, for more if he ever wants to do it, or, you know, could just end really perfectly there. But it's such a great ride. Like, once it finished, like, before the final chapter came out, I read it start to finish, and then the final chapter. And the art is so fantastic throughout. Some of the greatest fight sequences, because there's these ghost figures that can fight, but also there's so much fantastic gunplay and strategy. One of the best arcs is halfway through the series, where they've basically set up a security building to lock inside, like, our main characters, the good guys, and the antagonist, this Arjun terrorist cell. And there's all these, like, great plays of the fact, you know, if the Arjun comes back to life, you can tranquilize them so they go to sleep instead, but then the enemy's prepared for it. So there's all these fights where they're just constantly shooting themselves in the head to get the tranquilizer out of the system and then get back in the fight. And it ends so perfectly in that, like, a middle point where that fight comes up, but Sato only shows up at the end, near the end of the battle. And he walks in, and, you know, his underlings are like, "Sir, you know, everything's gone to shit. Here's what we've..." And Sato just puts a finger to his lips and just says, "Shh, no spoilers." And the fight begins a whole new way these two absolute sociopaths. And it's really fun. I think if, like, any of those comparisons I made really stick out, it's like 16 volumes, 80 chapters or something. It's a really brisk read. Like, I read it all in an afternoon. Arjun Demi Human. Glad it ended well.
Sign me up. I'll add it to the list of eventual series I'll get to. Actually, where is it on the My Anime list, I wonder?
Fortunately, not top 10. I don't know when you're going to get to it.
Man, I've got so long to go. so I thought we could end this episode by checking in on an old friend named Shonen Jump, the most popular way to read shonen manga, and you know, it's the place where you can read Naruto and One Piece and Dragon Ball, and also countless new series. I would say like got an average of maybe like one new series a month debuts on Shonen Jump. We read everything through the official app, which is a very cheap way to read lots of amazing manga. Probably like, I wish it was a service offered by Kodansha and other publishers, that's for sure. But I thought we could talk about two series. One I know that you've read because you were very excited about it, because it is by the mangaka of another series you really like. And then another one that I have a funny story about why I started reading it. But let's talk about Witch Watch first. This is the latest series by the mangaka of Astra Lost in Space, Kenta Shinohara. What was the other one? Sorry?
It sounds about right. And Sket Dance was a series he did before Astra Lost in Space. Also okay. Not on the app. Also fantastic.
There you go. And this is a comedy manga about a boy who is part ogre, but just looks like a regular dude, who has to become the guardian of his old childhood friend, who is now a witch. And so it's set in modern day, and they have to live together, and she's in love with him, and he's like a cold, stoic kind of dude.
Completely oblivious.
And so it's about them going to school and like living together, but also she's a witch and he's an ogre. And there's magic and all kinds of goofs and spoofs. The art is really, really lovely. And I think it is amusing enough, but I'm looking forward for a kind of stronger ongoing plot to develop, instead of it being like kind of a reset button every week. Connor, your thoughts?
Yeah, surprisingly, I actually enjoy it as a comedy the most. I know it will get, it opens in the first chapter. Like, you know how you have series like Mashle and stuff like that, where it starts as a comedy and eventually they get the push to become just an action manga. Yep. This one just opens the first chapter telling you, basically, we'll get there. We'll get to the big fights. Yep. Don't worry. But it's surprising how much I just like look forward to it maybe the most every Monday. I think I understand now why some of Japan's biggest shonen titles, like most longest running, like of 30 years, were comedy manga. Like there's that famous one. I can't think of the name.
With a dude who looks fucked. I know.
Yeah, that hero and like Saki K and stuff. Because, you know, when you've only got 20 chapters, there's something to the way this sets up like one big gag for the whole manga. All these interspersed ones. 20 pages, sorry. Like one big like payoff at the end. All these little cute gags. And like then there's some cute character moments. Maybe there's like a bit of a beat 'em up. Like it's such a satisfying read every Monday, and I think those characters are super cute. I love the way he draws their myriad of expressions, especially like the female cast that mm-hmm. we get introduced to. It's yep. really fun.
Yeah, it definitely is really fun, and I like the art, and I'm going to keep reading it. I need to go back and read Astra Lost in Space. I tried watching the anime but didn't love it.
Oh, there was an anime too. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So that is one of the new series. It's like 6 or 7 chapters in now. I'm up to date. It's fun. I'd recommend it. There's another series that debuted a couple weeks after Witch Watch, and my son is reading Dragon Ball on using the Shonen Jump app on his iPad, and it has notifications on. And a couple weeks ago, he excitedly came running into my room and said, Dad, there's a new Dragon Ball series that just started. And I was like, really? A new Dragon Ball series? That's huge. How come I didn't hear about that? And then I looked at the notification he got, and these guys know what they're doing. It's a new series called Nine Dragons Ball Parade.
cheeky little comma there, don't worry.
In Japan, it's called Kowloon's Ball Parade.
Okay.
Yeah, so this is another how do we relationship style English.
The great Viz downfall. Yeah. I do everything right except for this.
Every now and then. But yeah, so Nine Dragons Ball Parade is a sports manga about baseball. It is by Mikiyasu Kamada and Ashibi Fukui. This is a book about a young dude who's always dreamed about making the baseball team at this, illustrious baseball school. And he goes there for tryouts, and they're like, wow, even though you're not as strong or as fast as all the other students, you have the most amazing strategic thinking. You'd be such a benefit to any team. But the strategic thinking, that's what we do. We don't need players to be strategic. That's our job. We just want players, the strongest players and the fastest players. So sorry, but you can't go to school here. And so his lifelong dream is crushed. But when he's at the school, in line for the tryouts, he meets a kid who has like the most amazing natural pitching talent he's ever encountered. And this kid's going to be an absolute shoo-in, and he gets offered a spot on the school's team, but he turns it down because he saw so much potential and life in our main character that he wants to do whatever the main character does instead. And he's like, dude, you can't throw away your dream. Like, just let me go and have my boring life. You belong on that team. And then another girl enters the fray, and she's been watching from afar. And she's like, dude, my family owns like the once most glorious baseball school in Japan. And something happened, an incident many years ago, and all of the grounds have been torn to shreds. And but with my own hands and also my other hand, my bare hands, I've brought the baseball arenas back to their former glory, and now I just need to start the greatest baseball team, greatest high school basketball team, baseball team of all time. And I think you
tennis.
Guys, you guys are the people I need. And the three of them are on a mission to find the best baseball players who didn't go for the tryouts at the most obvious place for someone naturally talented. To go try out for baseball. And so it is this kind of very fun like quest featuring three characters finding people who have fallen through the cracks, great young baseball players who for some reason, maybe a family reason or like, you know, a public embarrassment moment has led them to just stop pursuing their dream, and then they need to convince them, hey, don't give up on your dreams, join our baseball team, we're going to do it together. And it is fucking great. I really like it. It's really stupid. And it's like, you know, I'm sure by the numbers sports manga, but I think it has so much heart and the art is really, really great. I enjoy this a lot. And I think you would like it too, Connor.
Yeah, I was actually just sort of flicking through it then. The art looks gorgeous, actually.
Yeah, I know I've tried to convince you to read just because of the ridiculousness of it, a rugby manga called Wolf Children.
Beast Children.
But that was just bizarre. This is like a genuinely good sports manga, I think. So I would recommend
six chapters, I might get on that.
Unreal. That brings us to the end of an unbelievable series, Issues. And I hope everyone listening has enjoyed it. Connor, I enjoyed adding many more series to my never-ending list of manga that I one day want to read.
It's why I'm here.
I'm going to be forcing some manga on some good friends and recording it soon. I've forced Jackson and Dusha from Sans Pants to read Uzumaki by Ooh. Junji Ito. So expect an episode about that very soon. Siobhan and I will be recording a week or two after that as well. And I'm reading some comics that aren't from Japan to celebrate, but also some that are.
Catch me dead.
I'm gonna read some Ninja Turtles comics because I realized that last Ronin series has started. So I'm gonna read some of that.
And yeah, I also read the Transformers comics.
Ooh. Yeah, I'm gonna read the that pulp book by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. I never read it yet.
Oh, nice!
It's been sitting on my bedside table underneath a bunch of manga volumes.
What else are bedside tables for?
Exactly. So thank you so much for listening. If you want to listen to more great podcasts, you should definitely listen to Connor's podcast, Wine Mums. Which doesn't come out as regularly as it should, but if you listen, maybe it will come out more regular.
We're recording one with Rebecca hopefully soon, so
maybe you, dear listener, are the Metamucil that Wine Mums needs to be more regular. but yeah, go find that wherever you download this podcast from, because it's there too. And Connor, what's your Twitter and your Instagram?
I am at Diddles MVP on Twitter.
What does that mean?
D-I-double-D.
Who the fuck's Diddles?
It was a cat I had many years ago.
That's
and
good.
I made it. I should probably change that.
No, may their legacy like live forever. I understand.
True. I mostly just retweet cool art I find on Twitter.
Diddles MVP.
That's something you're into.
And then your Instagram is Conamon_cat?
Yep. catch me actually doing the same thing mostly, but hey, sometimes it's funnier.
I look forward to going through your stories at the end of each day. Good art. Good jokes. You can find me on socials. I'm at LevDog, LevDawg. And of course, my other podcasts, Hey Fam, comes out every single week, and All the Small Games every single week. One of them is about pop culture and like Son of the Mask, and I guess maybe superheroes sometimes. And then the other one's about indie games. Which one is which? You have to listen to both to find out. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.